Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Friday. Happy October. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host. Thanks so much for being with us today. And the first Friday of the month is here already. It came early, and we are happy to welcome back Paul D. Shelton of Warwick Shore Express, an economic rundown, a lot to talk about. And also, before we go further, happy 50th anniversary to Walt Disney World. It's impacting us all, whether you live here, you visit here. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. I am blessed. It's always great, especially when you are with us. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
My
What's been
pleasure.
Going on?
Thank you. Oh, we've had a lot of stuff going on. Not the typical that we typically see the first Friday of the month. Our economic, or I should say our unemployment report is a little delayed because month end was just yesterday. And we'll get that in another 7 days. But there is still plenty of news on the economic front, and something that we are really thinking about and considering looking at is the panflation, that term that we're in right now. And this is the pandemic-induced inflation instead of, you know, the typical demand-driven inflation that we typically see in our economy. So where we are currently right now, we've seen a little volatility in the month of more volatility has crept into our markets in the month of September, with the S&P 500, you know, turning negative for the market and finishing off in the red, which has been different than the previous themes for the previous month. And a lot of that is driven by a lot of the uncertainty in the market right now. The Federal Reserve is having to adjust monetary policy, fiscal policy. They're done there as well, to kind of combat where we are in our economy, dealing with our employment situation, dealing with, you know, some of the bottlenecks that we see in the supply chains, you know, around the globe for specific goods and services and things of that nature. So in short, really, healthcare policy, you know, still remains economic policy at this time. The coronavirus has not gone away, though the numbers are much better today than they were 30 days ago. Especially regarding the Delta variant, but still the healthcare policy is what's really driving overall economic policy right now. And once we get that fully under control or eliminated, pray God that we can get that eliminated or fully under control in some manner, then we will start to see some more returning to the norms when it comes to those supply disruptions that we have. Hopefully that will right the ship for some of the labor shortages that we have as well. Additionally, you know, correct some of the things that we're seeing in those rising prices that have risen, not because of demand, but just because of the pandemic.
Well, I want to ask about the impact of the, I guess you could say, the transport of goods and services, the dilemma we're facing right now. I think it's causing us to rethink how much we depend on getting a lot of our products from overseas, because we can get them to our shores, but we can't even get them unloaded to be transported across the country. And then now it seems that I have seen stories where a lot of the retailers are well, some of them, especially the bigger ones, are taking matters into their own hands and are doing more like more of the ground shipping now that we used to do, just to try to get stuff to and from. And yeah, I hear that it's impacting some of the smaller businesses in a very bad way.
Yeah, so you make a very good point with that, and that will have some significant adverse reactions on small businesses that are not able to compete with some of the larger chains, like the Walmarts of the world out there and our Targets of the world that can, you know, afford to step in place whenever there is a supply chain disruption internationally. So there will be a effect on that, and I really think this is one of the long term conditions that we'll see in place as a result of this pandemic. Is not just the effect on the small businesses, but more of the vertical integration that businesses have to take now with being able to not only be a producer of the product, but also a deliverer of that product as well, and work out those deals back and forth, have it delivered to their stores that's local to that consumer, or even going the extra step and getting it delivered to the home that will typically, see through Amazon. But this has been something that has, has been a changing trend, I think, and overall with this online shopping and the consumer behavior changing in that respect. And I think this is just another leg of it that's starting to rear its head and show that consumer preferences have changed, and it may be here to stay permanently.
So one of the things that my husband reminded me is that, during the pandemic, we had, for example, here in Central Florida, in the Orlando area, a 407 day where we encouraged people to shop locally for what they needed, to support local restaurants instead of the chains and all that type of stuff. We may find ourselves doing a little bit more of that now, right?
We definitely do, and I see it personally. Just as an example now, I'm in the process of ordering shirts for my company. And as historically or in the past, the first time I went around ordering shorts and supplies and things of that nature for marketing purposes or for my firm, I went through VistaPrint, which is an international brand that, does business all over the world. And but as of today, I'm kind of looking more so for that local convenience of being able to go to a local embroidery shop that's within driving distance or that's a little closer, because I know that the turn time is going to be much better. And I'll be able to receive the product that I'm ordering, if not in the same day, within a few days, and not have to wait 2 to 3 weeks and run the risk of it being, locked down in bottlenecks somewhere in the country, or maybe, coming over the seas. So I think that is, something that is a very good thing for the local economy. With being a small business myself, I do, support other small businesses, and I do support, shopping locally. So I look forward to that, and I hope that trend does continue.
The other thing that is going to exacerbate things is the news that came out about the Postal Service increasing the lag time, or as some people were saying, the snail mail is becoming more so now, with them saying that instead of your regular, I guess, first class mail being 1 to 3 days, it could be 3 to 5 days. Just for that, just for a letter. That's going to affect some people, I think, as well. And, we do a lot of things digitally now with the computers, but there was still always a need to have, some paperwork delivered or mailed, to and from. Just, because paperwork, even though we get stuff digitally, paperwork does tend to legitimize things a little bit more, I think.
It's very true, and not just with paperwork, but that additional step for those small packages. I know, you know, a business owner that actually uses USPS a lot to deliver cigars. It's a cigar owner, a cigar bar, and people order cigars online from the store, and that's something that he uses to ship those cigars across the country. Now, the lag time, hopefully it won't be too long, but, you know, that's something that you don't want to ship and to deliver in a delayed process. If there were any other, you know, small goods or things like that that could be perishable or that don't, do not have a long shelf life, that could also affect the quality, you know, of that overall experience that the consumer is going to receive from that retailer. So in that situation, if you know, that cigar service is providing the cigars, but they're getting there, you know, sometimes, you know, a few days later, that could be an adverse reaction from the consumer. And that could negatively affect, you know, them ordering from that particular supplier again. So there is a lot more ramifications out there, and people still use the snail mail. Not as often, but it is still used. And so that's a very good call out.
One of the things that I'm hoping this might help is to impact local growers. You know, that's been a battle. And I know there's been efforts to help local growers, particularly minority growers. But I'm thinking now, if you have to, it's bad enough as it is right now. I just, you know, in my opinion, I'm just going to say, when you get produce and, you know, it's been picked earlier maybe than it should, but it has to be picked earlier in order to make sure that it gets here, you know, gets to your grocer and to your table in a timely fashion. I can't imagine what they would have to do now with the backup and deliver, you know, and the delays of delivery and stuff like that. Maybe this would be a good thing for local growers as well to be able to recoup some losses and be able to get new business.
Very possible. That is very possible. And we could see more in the way of our farmers markets, you know, being utilized a little bit more, which is also great for those local growers. So I hope that is the case.
Yeah. It just is a matter of us having to palate and eat, I guess, the way we used to eat. You eat what's available. You eat what you can get.
Correct.
You know, you eat strawberries when they're in season, you know, not just because you want strawberries at that particular time, you know. So, yeah. So now, well, we're going to take a break now because when we come back, I want to get into what we're celebrating today and the impact that it's had on Central Florida. So we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Paul D. Shelton of Warwickshire. This is G's Power Hour of Never Had So Good Entertainment. If you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is the first Friday of the month, and it's the first day of the month. And we are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshire.
And today also is the 50th anniversary celebration of Walt Disney World here in Central Florida. And there's a lot that has changed because of the entrance of Disney into our neck of the woods. So, Paul, what is the most, I guess you could say, the biggest on the Central Florida economy?
Wow, there's so many impacts, I think, that Disney has had on us here locally, tangible and intangible, you know, impacts that there has been. It's hard to say which one has been the greatest. I know the one that's felt the most is the increase in revenue and tax dollars that we get from tourists as they're traveling throughout the region. So that's been a great thing. But, you know, I did some research, and I went back and I actually found a study that was completed by a firm called Economics Research Associates. And this was a study that was completed back in 1967. I found it through the Library of the University of Central Florida. But there was an estimation that there would be an additional new wealth of $6.6 billion generated in the Florida economy with the implementation of Disney World construction in the first 10 years of operation. Now, this is $6.6 billion in 1967 inflation times. All right, so we have to really put that in perspective to what that would be and how that would really feel today. And one thing that you can note is between that time frame, between 1970 and just up through, you know, the end of 2019 up through 2020, the population of Orlando and the city within the city limits grew by 165%. A lot of that growth, you know, has been, you know, as a result of retirement, but much of it has been a result of people, you know, visiting in the area and people really falling in love with the area and coming here and deciding to stay. One, because of the climate, because of the, which is neutral and pretty good year round. And some of the opportunities for land ownership, growth, and things of that nature, as it was in the early 1960s, attribute a good amount of that, you know, exposure of this local area, you know, to Disney, which a lot of times we don't, you know, think about on the surface. You know, when Disney was first proposed and when they were, you know, it was an idea when it was coming to fruition, it was thought that, you know, it would be a model community. You know, I remember them talking about it being an experimental prototype community of tomorrow, which is where we get Epcot from. And it was supposed to, you know, feature a town center and a full complement of commercial facilities, office space, cultural and recreational complexes. And a town center would be surrounded by residential areas and necessary community services. And to think about that initial concept, and I think as to where we are now with, you know, Avalon Park, Baldwin Park, and how our communities and Dr. Phillips and all around, you know, not just, you know, those areas, all around Central Florida and all around the stuff, having, you know, sort of a town center that will be the feature of it and then complementary services all wrapped around that for that community. So, you know, outside of just the, you know, the annual revenue that it pours into the economy every year, which is north of a tune of about $80 billion as an economic impact to Central Florida, just through visitors that are visiting. And that's a large portion of that is a result of Disney, although there is some additional, you know, some of that does, you know, bifurcate a little bit when you think about additional dollars could be spent at SeaWorld and some of the other parks around here. But really, Disney is the foothold and what drives people, you know, to, you know, this region of the world. Everyone comes here because they know Disney. Not shaking a stick at SeaWorld and Universal Studios, but, you know, they get visitations because more than likely people are coming here to see, you know, Disney World. So that's a significant impact. And just breaking out some of the numbers, if you look at, you know, roughly 75 million visitors in a typical year. And, you know, and I looked at some numbers that was pre-pandemic, so it wouldn't skew it, you know, south in any direction. But a typical year, you'll have a roughly 75 million visitors to the region that are frequenting the theme parks, again, most likely Disney. And that accounts for just over roughly around $80 billion. So on average, per person, per trip that's coming here, there's about a little over $1,000 per person that's spent each time they visit Orlando from a tourist standpoint. That is great for our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's going to really help, you know, continue to drive growth in the overall economy, especially in Central Florida as we, you know, begin to get some more normalcy in our lives, especially post-pandemic. And Disney is here, has a strong foothold here. And Disney has been really smart, you know, since opening back in 1971 with Epcot. They've really ventured out, you know, and added multiple theme parks. They haven't added another theme park since 1998 when they opened Animal Kingdom. But they've been smart about opening up more and more theme parks to kind of lock in the dollars that they're getting. So some of the places that, you know, I used to remember growing up here, such as Watermania, Wet n Wild, you know, those places we know have kind of disappeared. You know, Disney did open up their two water parks that they have. And, you know, Universal came in to rifle that. You also had, you know, Magic Kingdom come on board. We had Universal Studios, which is MGM, and now Animal Kingdom, which kind of, you know, takes, you know, you away from having to travel to Tampa, to Busch Gardens or any other place or any other zoos or things of that nature. So they really have been, you know, getting people to the Orlando region and keeping them there. In addition to that, all of the resorts that they have, they ventured into media, TV shows and things of that nature. So and all of that really plays and does add revenue to our local economy, even if it's even, you know, through media and some of the other things. There are radio broadcasts that still take place here from ESPN Radio in the Disney area. So there's still there's a lot, you know, that it has provided, you know, to the local economy just by bringing tourists here that will come here, spend, and, you know, patronize all of our stores, restaurants, and things. Well, a lot of times in a Disney property, but a lot of times off the Disney property. And in addition to that, you know, Disney has the cruise line, the vacation club, which also, you know, brings additional people here. And they're spending a lot of money. Roughly, and this was about 10 years ago, they were spending just under $1 billion in goods and services sourced from Floridian vendors. So these are, you know, vendors that are providing them with some of the snacks and, you know, the delectables that we get from the theme parks, you know, that's providing them with all of those Mickey Mouse-shaped ice cream cones and things of that nature that are coming from manufacturers here. Also, construction workers, roofers, painters, things of that nature that are local businesses here that Disney is sourcing for, you know, that revenue, and that all drives our local economy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have one of the biggest airports, or, well, busiest airports, I should say, in the world, in the entire world, right here, and a lot of it has to do with Disney, but that has created, you know, more jobs, and, you know, as there was a whole town as a result of Disney, because
right.
I don't think Celebration would have been in existence had it not been for Disney. Yeah.
Yeah, and those are some of those soft, you know, intangibles that we don't even realize. I mean, we understand that, you know, they approximately have 200,000 employees and local, and how many of those employees are local, and how that affects our economy directly. But we don't often look at, you know, the impact that Disney, you know, really had on, and I don't think that we as a community were really prepared for the growth that Disney would have, and it seems like we're still trying to catch up and still falling behind the scenes, especially when it comes to transportation getting there. So back in the 1960s, and when Disney was first opened in the 70s, they said the most traveled or the second most traveled corridor in the United States between Orlando International Airport was from the airport to Disney, to Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
That was the second most traveled area outside of in New York. There's a thoroughfare in New York City that had more population of cars and vehicles and transit that was taking place. Back then in the 70s and 80s, the thought process of having commuter rail was there, but never implemented because they said it was just, you know, because of Disney traffic that wouldn't, you know, cause, you know, any spurious population growth in the United or in this region of the United States. It wouldn't cause people to want to relocate to Orlando or industries to want to relocate to Orlando to support Disney, which we're seeing a lot of today. There are so many industries and vendors, I should say, that have relocated or opened local operations in Orlando to support Disney as one of their primary customers. When it comes to providing lighting for different shows or, you know, different companies are in place, you know, to service that. In addition, or I should say more so explicitly, Disney has decided to move a large conglomerate of executive membership from California to the Orlando area. To Lake Nona area, exactly. So there's it's just been exponential. I mean, I really think it's impossible to truly magnify the impact that Disney has or has and continues to have on our local economy. It's well above the projected, you know, $6.6 billion in the first 10 years of new wealth, you know, creation for the economy of Florida. It has, you know, far exceeded that and continues to do so on a daily basis. And that's not even the revenue generated from taxes. You know, it's just all from, you know, consumers and business-to-business operations between Disney and vendors.
Now, the tax revenue, who really, I guess I have a question about that. Who really benefits? Because is it in terms of, I guess there's two counties that has the greatest impact from Disney, Orange and Osceola. And I venture to say maybe parts of Lake County as well, but who really gets the biggest financial benefit from tax-wise from Disney?
So when you think about taxes, I think about it spread off. I know that Osceola and Orange County are primarily, I guess, the epicenter, really, Orange, Osceola County is, of where Disney is located. I'm also thinking about not just the direct, you know, taxes that Disney may pay, but I'm thinking about those consumers that are coming here to spend and they're staying in the tourist districts and they're paying their additional tourist tax that's driven to really help benefit, you know, our transportation. And there's been a lobby for that to help drive, you know, better transportation. So there's a lot of dollars that are generated, you know, through those tourist taxes that are, you know, currently in place right now. But we have to understand that, you know, even though a lot of people, you know, patronize Disney, not everyone stays in either Osceola or Orange County. Sometimes people are staying in Polk County or in Seminole County. And oftentimes a lot of people may be even staying on the coast and travel over either from Daytona or from Tampa, you know, to visit Disney when they're in town. So it spreads so far. It's really hard to really quantify, you know, the impact that it has, but it is truly significant. Truly significant.
Mm. Well, happy birthday to Disney, and I guess in some respects, happy birthday to us, you know, locally. you know, with some of the benefits. I know there have been some overwhelming other impacts that weren't foreseen as well. But and one of those things that you talked about was, and I want to get to that when we come back, is because one of the things that's on the table right now is infrastructure legislation. So we need to talk a little bit about the impact in terms of transportation here in Central Florida, and also what's going on with the latest of that in the government staving off of the government shutdown. So anyway, we're here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on KHAM Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us on this beautiful Friday afternoon, the first day of October, first Friday in October, and just, you know, hopefully a wonderful weekend, a nice fall weekend, and we welcome back Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore to talk about the economy, and especially we were just talking about Disney as this Walt Disney World celebrates its 50th anniversary here in beautiful Central Florida. And I want to ask you one of the things that we talked about in terms of impact on Central Florida is transportation, particularly roads. I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about what's going on with the infrastructure legislation. So can you give us a little insight, please?
Yeah, so infrastructure is something that, you know, that really excites me. You know, I am one that does not like sitting in traffic, and I'm one that does not, you know, like having the fear of, you know, is a bridge or something antiquated and not sufficient, you know, for us to utilize. So infrastructure is something that we definitely need, and it's an ongoing process across this whole country. You know, it's not something that we can establish and pass one time and move on and never do it again. It's something that's going to have to be addressed over and over again. And currently where we stand right now is there is no vote as of yet. Nancy Pelosi hopes to have the House vote on the infrastructure bill as of today, but there are still some, you know, disagreements about exactly what that will look like and how it would play out. And Nancy Pelosi, as we know, has said she will not bring any vote to the table unless they have, you know, the support, enough support to be able to be passed. So with her, you know, not bringing that to the table as of right now, it appears that there is not the support there, you know, from both sides of the aisle, and especially, you know, it says right now there's more, you know, disagreement within the Democratic Party that's causing, you know, the delay this time but to be able to be sent through. So hopefully we can get some reconciliation on that and get something passed in. For our local area, infrastructure is something that is needed. We need a better mass transit system, in my opinion, locally in Central Florida, because SunRail is operating in a manner that it should not have to operate in. SunRail is really designed to be more of a far reach between that deep outskirts of the metropolitan area to get people to the center area, but then there needs to be another system, which would typically be more of a light rail system that could, you know, get people from east to west, north to south inside of the city once that's operating. Now, we do have strong possibility that that may come about possibly with the infrastructure bill, although it's not explicitly noted in there for the Central Florida region, but with SunRail being up in place and with the growth that we're continuing to see, as well as having Brightline being able to push it forward and moving towards that opening date of having connectivity from Miami International Airport to Orlando International Airport via transit train, then we should provide a pathway for more of those infrastructure dollars to be, you know, spent and utilized in the Central Florida region, which, you know, whenever infrastructure and construction takes place in the area, it kind of begets more revenue outside of the initial revenue that's driven and the cost that's driven from the actual infrastructure itself, because more companies want to come to the area, and more institutions feel that the area is more valuable. You have more opportunities to throw your name in a hat for future hosting of the Olympics. So a lot of things of that nature are all revenue drivers for an area, and this infrastructure bill could help us in that way.
Okay, so I have an issue. I have a long-running issue. And that is, you know, we talk about Brightline and we talk about some of these and SunRail and all of these other transportation systems that don't seem to benefit the people that make up the foundation of some of our area. And what I'm talking about is the people that work out on I-Drive and at the theme parks, that work at the hotels and restaurants. There's a good portion of them that system barely serves, much less a new mass transit system serves. And there's got to be a way to address that, because you have people struggling to try to get to work with lousy traffic, taking extra time to get to work, which takes away time from families and things that need to be attended to at home. You know, you get upset about parents not necessarily being able to make PTA meetings or whatever the case may be. Although now, you know, some of this stuff is being done on Zoom or, you know, whatever web service you're using. But at the same time, it's still a matter of having time to attend whatever meeting it is to address issues with children and with families. So, I just, that is my biggest beef when it comes to these new and I guess eye candy things with in terms of the transit. So how do I don't know, how do you know, how do we get maybe more of our I guess you could say I would say big businesses, local big, they have an impact. They have a say in terms of how this goes on. And I would say someone like a Disney or like a Lockheed Martin or you know, someone else that's big and that has big business here in Florida would be able to have a say to say, you know, our people need to get to us to do the work that we need them to do, and they're being ignored. How do we get more of that to happen?
Yeah, it's really comes down to politics, and you know, someone that has followed, you know, the development evolution of mass transit in this area since the early 90s, you can look through the Orlando Sentinel and find numerous articles where, you know, Maitland disagreed with Winter Park on right-of-ways, and that was even true during SunRail. But just specifically speaking to when they wanted to implement light rail, and even going all the way back, you know, to the 60s and 70s, you know, when they realized that, you know, the 528, which we have now, that corridor between Disney and the airport was the second most traveled in the world, and they said, is there a need for any other transit opportunities. We have always stepped sideways when it came to the opportunity to advance and grow in that direction. And I have personally attended several of the local community meetings, specifically the one between for the OIA connector to iDrive, which they had a feasibility study done for, you know, three different routes for a train line, which would have had anywhere from, I think, about, you know, 9 to 13 different stops along the way from Lee Vista Boulevard and Cimarron, connecting you all the way, you know, to iDrive and the 528, with multiple stops in between there, hitting multiple spaces such as Oak Ridge Road, OBT, John Young, the Florida Mall, Sand Lake, connecting with the SunRail station there. And the feedback that is often given at all of those meetings is only the feedback of many retirees that do not want to see the progression, quite honestly, and want to see, you know, more congestion or see more trains built because that's what they were used to in New York or Chicago and other municipalities in Boston. They don't want to see that happen to their retirement home. They don't want to see that happen to the place where they, you know, they want to ride out the sunset. So that has truly been the struggle in this area for the longest time. It was, you know, a prayer and a million miracles just to get SunRail up and running. But like you said, SunRail is not, it's operating in a form that it's not designed to operate in. When you look at other, you know, municipalities, say Chicago, for instance, SunRail, the way it operates now is very similar to the Metra in Chicago, where the Metra is designed to take people from the far reaches outside of the city and bring them inside of the city. You have far, you know, you have fewer stops, TA, which is the Chicago Transit train lines that will stop, you know, maybe every quarter of a mile or so, and allow people to get all throughout the city to all the different employers in a much more feasible manner. And it works in tune with the bus system as well, so that you can cover the area and not have to have essentially a car to be able to live in the area. That's one thing I hear many people complain about when they move to Orlando. From like New York or New Jersey or anything, that says, you know, I never had a car there, but if I move here and I don't have a car, I can't get around. And unfortunately, it is that way. And it's that way partially because some of the retirees, you know, do not want that growth. And then many municipalities could not agree on coming together on right-of-way rules. For example, you know, I personally worked with one of the previous mayors of Maitland, and he told me one of the reasons he voted down is because he felt like he could make it more of an advantage. Altamont would have a stop at I-4 in the 436, and it was going to disadvantage him because there was the Maitland Exchange was not as populated and wasn't the intersection that it is now, so there would not be a stop there. So he voted it down, which creates the situation we have today. So to answer your question, you know, how do we get those stakeholders from corporate America to step in and say, this is what the area needs? The way that they step in and do that is we've seen that with Amazon and how they vote on where their newest, you know, distribution centers are. So Amazon and many of the large fulfillment sites, they will go out. And where Amazon put their H2Q, their second headquarters, up in New York, was based on transit. They go out and they have an RFP that they issue, and all the cities, municipalities around the world around the country, answered their RFP and said, this is what we offer, this is what we have. And Orlando was ignored because we did not have, you know, sufficient to them in that case. So we lost out on all that potential future jobs and growth and everything of that nature.
I understand the thing with the retirees. I mean, you know, I'm older now, but I was the product of older parents, and I got a chance to see a lot of their challenges. And the thing is, though, people are coming. we have the advantage, disadvantage, however you want to look at it, of having wonderful weather most of the year. And people who are tired of shoveling snow or tired of a lot of wildfires or want to not have to, you know, want to be able to drive an hour and a half to get to a beach or whatever, they're coming. And there's nothing really you can do about that. You know, now, like you said, it, you know, maybe we lost out on Amazon, and so that portion, that amount of people in those jobs or whatever are not coming here. But that's kind of a drop in the bucket compared to other people who are coming here. And the thing about it is you kind of have to be prepared. You have to have some people, government and involved in the community, that have some sort of foresight to see this is coming, how do we get ahead of it and manage it so it has the minimal amount of negative impact on our community. And that's what has to happen. You know, let's make it still comfortable for our seniors. Let's still make it safe for the pedestrians, because we got that reputation and that issue here as well. Let's make it safe. Let's make it convenient for the people that are the backbone of our community, that are serving us in the shops and restaurants and theme parks, you know. But let's make it manageable. And we have to have people in leadership with that type of foresight. But anyway, speaking of having foresight, the next thing we need to talk about when we come back is the government, the staved off government shutdown that still is an issue. So I want to talk a little bit about that with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore here on G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now it's on for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
New Swiffer Sweeper is redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720, Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Beautiful day today. First Friday in October, first day in October. A couple of things I want you all to be aware of. Number one, it is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So, you know, see something, say something. You know, it is that time that you need to really become more enlightened and pay attention. We should always be paying attention, but just remember that that's going on. Also, this month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, you know, if you have someone that you kind of are concerned about, make sure they go get checked out. If you need to get checked out and you've been putting it off, stop procrastinating. Go get checked out. This means men and women, you know, pay attention to your bodies, because men do get breast cancer as well. So please remember that. Also, like we said, again, it is the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World here in Central Florida. And also going on tonight, 7:30 at Harry P. Lew Gardens in beautiful downtown Orlando. An oldie but goodie starting at 7:30 tonight. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So I probably need to go so I can remember what it's about. But anyway, those are some of the things that are going on. Coming on board, G's Power Hour, the new advertiser, Anderson & Welch. We are pleased to welcome them, and you'll be hearing them in the next few months. So just wanted to let you know that as well. In the meantime, we are back with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshire, our economist, and, economic shutdown. What's going on with that? Why can't we get that right?
Well, and unfortunately, it's been several years since we've had a budget in place that has functioned and actually had a budget. You know, we've been putting tape on the old budget for several years, extending debt ceiling, signing, you know, 6 weeks, you know, referendums here and there at a time. So that's exactly what happened last night. Is we avoided another government shutdown that was looming the Thursday night deadline at midnight. Had we not had anything signed in place, the government would have officially, in our, you know, as we know it, went over the fiscal cliff, which it has happened before. We did go over the fiscal cliff for a few weeks previously, and then to stop running. But what happens when you do go over the fiscal cliff is many government employees may not get paid. You know, our, you know, men and women that are fighting the war in Iraq and everything, it would be horrible for them to not receive a paycheck while they're over there defending our freedom. At the same time, those that are retired, those that are, you know, relying on Social Security and other aid of that nature, that could dry up as well. And that could be cataclysmic for the economy.
Okay.
So, however...
Wait. I keep hearing and seeing a lot of Band-Aids, okay, a lot of temporary fixes. Why can't we, I mean, I know things need to be modified as we progress and as we become a more intricate economy and stuff like that. But why is it that we keep running up on this last minute, oh, we've got to stay up overnight and we've got to fight and we can't, you know, why can't we get this right?
it's just politics. Honestly, it's a lot of, you know, politics that is going on back and forth that is tying this up. And it's become, with social media, and, you know, I don't want to blame that on social media, but with social media being so prevalent, and senators easily can go to, you know, put out a tweet or anything to their constituents and say, you know, this side of the aisle is preventing you from getting your medicines this week because of this. It causes, you know, them to feel empowered to do so, get more votes, and not actually come sit down at the table and work on a budget that is going to be passed and inappropriate. It is a very frustrating thing to live without having a budget. You know, as a financial advisor, it's probably more frustrating to me than anyone because that's something I tell people to do all the time, and to see our own country not being able to come to that agreement and fund a bill, but yet still continue to kick the can down the road and raise the debt ceiling and do those things. It's extremely frustrating. And when you actually look at the funding of this country and a lot of things that we're spending money for, a lot of things are good, a lot of things are needed, and a lot of things are a waste. And oftentimes, you know, just you understand that we could be just wasting time based on things that are not essential to the forward progress of this country and to, you know, the forward progress of that really, really need the aid that the government provides and people that are relying on the government for their paychecks. Because of the service that they're providing to us as citizens, so it's extremely frustrating. Extremely frustrating.
One other issue I want to tackle, and the time has really flown, but I want to talk about the increase in minimum wage. Now, I've always, you know, the running joke. Florida's my home, and the running joke has always been, we pay in sunshine, okay? But that's,
yeah.
You know, and I know that's a part of it, but that's, you know, and that's why we're talking about, you know, people are coming here, and part of the reason is that. But that gets old after a while, okay? And people do need to have wages to live on. And, you know, the gas gone up. We're over $3 a gallon, you know. Gas is up, you know. Food prices, and especially if you try to get healthy food, that's hard. That's gone up. Housing gone up, okay? Can't find affordable housing. And that was happening before COVID hit. So why is it that there's this argument, and I know what part of the argument is. It's because for small businesses, raising the minimum wage is tough. But for businesses that can afford it, you know, businesses that have these lavish Christmas parties, I'm calling you out, and I love them. I do. I go if there's one. But companies that have all these lavish perks and stuff like that, why is the difficulty of, you know, picking between perks that can be reduced down and decent wages for people who live on from day to day so they can keep a roof over their head, so they can keep their family fed? Help me out.
I think, you know, there could be a few different ways that, you know, the problem is being, you know, approached. One, government says that trickle-down economics are, I shouldn't just say government, but, you know, the Republican side of our government says that trickle-down economics always work. The more that business owners make, the more they pay their employees. And we don't see that, and that has never been true. I know I've worked for business owners, and they've made more and more money every year. My salary ebbs and flows by 1% or 2% every year. So that's not essentially the case. Where that works, and you are right, there is more that couldn't be done, that can be done on an individual level from businesses. Our minimum wage in the state of yesterday, essentially, so there was an increase from $8.56 into $10 even in our Florida minimum wage. At the same time, that's a 16.8%, you know, increase in the amount of income that people are getting, but at the same time, they just released the studies that show how much rent has increased. And like you said, affordable housing is a major issue. But, you know, rents alone have increased by more than that percentage. So they're still catching up from behind in that respect on the minimum wage.
And the eviction moratorium is over, by the way. You know.
Correct. Yeah. The eviction moratorium has ended. So there's a lot that's taking place right now, and a lot of things that are culminating, coming together all at one point in time. But for whatever reason, you know, our economy has never been able to find that sweet spot as to where, you know, minimum wage actually, you know, meets the minimum efficiency of living. Unfortunately,
yeah, it's hard. It's very sad and upsetting. Is there a solution, I guess, or is there at least something that could be done to put our economy, to put our businesses, put our and also we have to do, I guess, more educating of our consumers, especially our young consumers that haven't gotten out into the workforce yet. Is there a way to move in the right direction? And we've got like about 30 seconds, I think.
Yeah, there is a potential way to move in the right direction, and it has to do with education, like you kind of alluded to there, but education from the ground root levels, from the high school levels, educating people and going back to thinking about the trade skills and things that we've talked about, you know, before in the past. But there's a lot that goes into it, and there has to be buy-in from both sides. There has to be buy-in from corporate America and buy-in from the local government to be able to make it truly worthwhile for everyone.
Paul D. Shelton, have a blessed weekend. Take care of you and your family, okay? Be well.
Likewise, you too.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening to us. Have a blessed weekend. Go enjoy it. You know, de-stress, please. This has been G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good. Entertainment talk with you on Monday, God willing. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.